This is the son of PCJ.
Radio Berlin International.
Ici Radio Canada. This is Canada.
This is Radio Nederland, the Dutch World Broadcasting System in Hilversum, Holland.
You're tuned to Swiss Radio International in Bern.
This is Free China as a presentation of the Voice of Free China, the international service of the Broadcasting Corporation of China.
This is Radio Havana, Cuba.
Broadcasting from Cuba, free territory in the Americas.
This is Radio South Africa.
This is Yugoslavia Radio Belgrade calling.
This is Israel broadcasting from Jerusalem.
This is Radio Pyongyang of the Democratic People's Republic of Korea.
This is the General Overseas Service of the BBC.
Media Network Plus, produced and presented by Paulette McQuarrie and Keith Perrell.
Well, hello, friends, and welcome again to another edition of the program. Coming up today, we bring you part two of our two-part documentary, taking a look at what it's like working as a foreign correspondent in China. We have this, plus propagation and some of the latest news from the world of media, so stay tuned. This is Media Network Plus, promising no paper cuts, unless you're a complete nitwit. But first, here's Paulette McQuarrie with a look at some of the headlines from the world of media.
BBC World Service has announced the launch of new mobile sites for BBC Indonesia and BBC Hausa in responsive design, a technology which tests mobile users' screen sizes and ensures they download the most optimized version for their device. With the launch of these two responsive sites, all mobile users who visit the BBC Indonesia and BBC Hausa mobile sites will automatically be routed to the mobile-optimized versions, thus getting the best possible user experience that their device can deliver. The BBC is at the forefront of the move into responsive design in the Asian and African mobile news markets. This month, the BBC World Service is planning to launch this technology for its Russian-language news website, bbcrussian.com. Russian daily Izvestia reported on Tuesday that counterintelligence officials at the U.S. Department of Justice have asked a major Russian broadcasting company to submit all records of its contacts with Russia, citing a copy of the department's request. The authorities have demanded a description of all dealings and transactions that LLCRM Broadcasting has provided to Russia or any other foreign country. LLCRM Broadcasting organizes the broadcast of the Voice of Russia radio station in the United States. The company will be required to provide copies of any relevant written contracts and detailed descriptions of any relevant oral contracts. Depending on the results of this investigation, LLCRM Broadcasting may be required to register as a foreign agent in the U.S. in accordance with the Foreign Agents Registration Act. A similarly worded but differently aimed law took effect in Russia in November. A Sacramento Asian language television station has landed a deal to expand distribution of its programming into three additional Comcast Corporation markets. Crossings TV will expand in April into Chicago, Seattle, and San Francisco through Comcast Xfinity, said Frank Washington, the TV station's CEO. Washington told the Business Journal that by expanding to those new markets, Crossings TV adds 3 to 4 million viewers to its existing 1.25 million. Washington projects the company will triple its revenue this year. Crossings TV went on the air in 2005 and ended 2012 with its first very small cash flow profit. Crossings TV and Comcast didn't disclose terms of the deal, which was signed in December. Content for Crossings TV comes from three sources, Washington said. The company produces its own news and entertainment programming, including coverage of local events such as the Chinese New Year Parade and the Yuba City Marysville Sikh Festival. It pays for movies and other high-level entertainment. In addition, other programmers pay to get their content on Crossings TV. AMC Sundance Channel Global has concluded distribution agreements with key pay TV platforms in Poland, Hungary, Spain, the Philippines, and Thailand. In Poland, Sundance Channel has launched on Multimedia Polska, one of the country's leading cable providers, as a 24/7 channel in high definition and standard definition. In Hungary, the Sundance channel is launching as a subtitled 24/7 SD linear channel on Magyar Telecom via cable and IPTV services. The channel is also available locally on UPC. In Spain, the channel will launch in the coming weeks as a 24/7 SD linear service in dubbed format on cable operator R. The network is also available locally via Movistar, Imaginio, and Euskaltel. AMC Sundance Channel Global has recently secured distribution for both of its Asian brands, Sundance Channel and WETV, on pay TV platforms throughout the region. These recent developments follow numerous other distribution deals secured across Europe and Asia over the past few months, including additional carriage in France, the Netherlands, Belgium, Portugal, Romania, Turkey, Korea, and Taiwan. You can find these and other media news stories at the Kim Andrew Elliott blog. There's a link to it on our homepage, www.pcjmedia.com. Just scroll to the bottom and you'll find it there. That's the news and media for this week. I'm Paulette Macquarie.
All right, thank you very much, Paulette. You're listening to Media Network Plus, coming to you from PCJ Radio International, heard on the World Radio Network, Sirius XM in Canada and the United States, Sky Digital in Europe, and on great partner stations everywhere.
Call the PCJ answer line at country code 44-20-3286-1399. That's country code 44-20-3286-1399 and leave your comments and questions. On shortwave, satellite, and the internet, this is PCJ Radio.
Well, last week on the program, we brought you part one of a two-part program that was produced by ABC Radio National in Australia. And it's an interesting program because being a foreign correspondent in China, compared, let's say, to other countries, is a relatively new thing. It's only been since, let's say, the 1970s. Whereas previously going back to, well, the 1920s and 1930s and 50s and 60s, there were foreign correspondents in many other countries. But China was a different case, pretty much like the Soviet Union. When China opened up to the world officially in the late 1970s, that's when things really started to move. And anyone who worked for any major media outlet wanted to be posted in Beijing or Shanghai. But in the early 1970s, this was at the height of the Cultural Revolution, it was a very different thing. And there were only a small handful of journalists there at the time. Now, granted, yes, China has changed a lot through the years, but there are certain aspects of working as a correspondent in the People's Republic of China that have remained the same. We now bring you part two of this interesting documentary, produced and presented by Richard Ady.
Officials have opposed a normal contact between foreigners and locals and tried to restrict foreigners to special compounds. Some of Terzani's writing was highly critical of the totalitarian regime. One report was about his children's experience in a Chinese school, where they're said to have been systematically segregated and observed. When asked yesterday whether Terzani was on the list of unfriendly journalists, a foreign ministry spokesman said, "I guess you can make your own judgment."
Helene Chung was actually the first woman the ABC sent overseas as a foreign correspondent, and she naturally wanted to do well. And there was other, more prosaic pressure, too.
I also had, when I arrived, the problem of having to totally refurbish the apartment after 10 years, because China was a very costly place. I think the figure given to me at the time, or I learnt, was in the order of a quarter of a million or so a year it cost in Beijing. Now, unlike today, where everything is made in China, nothing made in China then worked. Nothing made in China could be used in a bureau. You could not even get envelopes that you could lick. You had to use a pot of paste. Even stamps had to be pasted on with glue. There was no such thing as carbon paper. Now, maybe you've forgotten what carbon paper was, but this was not when everyone used a computer. There was no such thing as a fax machine. Faxes came out in 86 or so, however, they were not in China then. We used a telex machine. That was the form of communication. So everything was pretty backward. I mean, you couldn't have a Chinese-made typewriter. You couldn't have a Chinese-made anything. Mm. So all the equipment, even the paint, the carpet, the refrigerators, the stove, everything had to come up from Hong Kong. And the reason the refurbishment had to be left to a new correspondent was it would cost the ABC an arm and a leg, a couple of arms and legs in duty, if it came in of its own accord, not with a newly appointed correspondent.
Refurbishing is something you eventually finish. Other problems you have to wrestle with every day.
It was necessary to go through a Chinese operator to get a line to Sydney. And the lines were so poor, I had to shout to be heard. Everyone had to shout. That's why everyone in China shouts, or one of the reasons. And I would sometimes shout for up to 5 hours through a series of operators, because I'd lose one. I'd finally get through to Sydney. The technician would say, the line's no good. I'd have to go back, wait in my queue, shout through the operator, get through. This would sometimes take 5 hours before I got a line that was almost acceptable for a piece on air. In fact, I shouted so much, I regularly lost my voice. And one year, I lost my voice 5 times, and the newly appointed Australia doctor based in China said, if I didn't watch it, I could lose my voice permanently. Well, clearly I didn't, but so I was very lucky. Now, that, of course, has changed, because there's no problem in communication with China in any form now, even television, instant through to Australia and elsewhere.
It isn't quite as simple as that, of course. Stephen McDonnell.
Most of the gear, you know, of course we've got sort of modern gear these days, and it works a treat when it works. The biggest problem is internet speeds, especially if we're on the road. Like now, if we hit somewhere, the first thing we'll try and do is test the internet speeds in the hotel, for example, because you have to be sending all this material back el pronto, like they expect it, potentially within minutes, depending on where you are. And so we're battling that internet speed all the time, even in the bureau. What makes it even worse is that to get around the so-called Great Firewall of China, you need to use a virtual private network, a VPN.
Yeah.
So to look at any sites that are blocked, you know, anything, or not be subject to Chinese censorship, you need to use this. Again, this slows down the computer speed. So this is our biggest headache. It's computer speed. And that means logging on and looking at websites, or it means filing via FTP, because we file over the internet these days. Even from the bureau, we file from the internet. So that's our biggest headache.
Actually, that speed, the other side of it, of course, is that you are expected to file a lot more than previous correspondents.
Sometimes we joke about this, that our bosses, when they're all in the field, they never had to do it, but they expect us to. But, for example, you know, recently we had a big court case that we had to cover. Now, we're expected to do, well, let me think, 7 radio news stories, 2 or 3 radio current affairs stories, a 7 p.m. and a late line television story, then possibly a bit of a rant, as we call it, where we're just talking to the camera for News 24, and any other crosses to, it could be anything from Metro Radio to News Radio. Then by the time we've done all of that, we start working on the AM piece for the next morning. And that's without even filing to other platforms like the internet, for example, the ABC website. They'd love us to write articles for them, but we just don't have time to do it.
The explosion of demands on correspondents in terms of the different outlets they have to service really began in the 90s. Jane Hutchin arrived in Beijing in 1995. She'd grown up in Hong Kong, was fluent in Cantonese, and had learnt Mandarin. But as you'll hear, knowing the language will only take you so far.
This is quite bad, but I know there's worse pollution further down the road. I don't understand why we're coming to the electricity plant.
I tell you, this water is not water. This water is down below.
Why
won't you let me choose the place myself? Well, if there's nothing to see, then why can't we look for ourselves? What is the problem?
That's from a foreign correspondent story in 1996. Getting it was hard work.
We ended up finding this locality along the Huai River that, you know, literally the river there had gone black and it was dead. And to actually get to talk to those people, though, because when we were with the officials, the buses would go speeding past these very black bits. And we were very lucky one day because we were actually held up by a massive traffic jam because there was some kind of road work going on. So we said, oh, we'll get out here and start filming. And before they could stop us, we were out filming. A massive group of locals had gathered around us and they started complaining about the government and said, does the government see what they're doing? And what about our lives? We can't live if the river's dead. There's no fish. And they took us down. And indeed, the river was bubbling. It was that kind of disgusting. It was just bubbling. And we filmed it because they couldn't really stop us. You know, they were calling people on their phones, but they couldn't really stop us because it had just happened. But then the shutters came down and they didn't really want to take us to the factory that we'd asked to go, the factory that was causing a lot of the pollution. And so we had already brought with us a small digital camera. And what we tried to do was to contact the people that we wanted to speak to and go and visit them in the evening where, you know, say goodbye to the officials after our nice big banquet, go home, say we're very, very tired, it's 6:30, oh, we're so tired, we want to be ready for tomorrow, and then we'd jump in a taxi and go out and film the people that we wanted to speak to. And they were onto us, of course, and they realised when we all sort of got out together, even though we weren't carrying a big camera with us, that we were up to something. So that's what happened. There was a taxi chase through a very, very crowded small city, in and out of markets. Then we would jump out, we would separate. It was a real hullabaloo. We eventually did manage to shake our tail and speak to some people who had lived by the river, who collected the water for us to show us what, you know, they were having to live by because they didn't have tapped water then. And it made a fascinating story, but of course the officials were not pleased.
And if you displeased someone official, you had to atone, sometimes by writing something called a self-criticism.
It never happened to me in the foreign ministry in Beijing itself. I wasn't told to write one there, but in smaller municipalities, I was made to write several self-confessions. Now, I didn't have a big problem with this because I knew that my role as the leader of the team was to take the responsibility. So if I made it all my fault, that means that our Chinese assistants who worked for us would not be punished because it was me, their leader, telling them to do something, and none of the other team would be responsible because I was the evil person that ordered them to do this thing. So that's really what it was about, just to say that I was responsible. I told them to go out on the street and film this protest or this disgusting water, and I take responsibility for this.
Some things haven't changed about China over the last 40 years. Some things have changed enormously. And the ABC correspondents have changed too. The early ones didn't have Mandarin. Now they do, which makes an enormous difference. Though it doesn't mean there isn't room for confusion. Stephen McDonald.
Well, these days, Beijing is a big modern metropolis, and they are used to foreigners there, and they're also used to foreigners who speak Chinese. So with white face, you can get into a cab and start talking to a cabbie in Mandarin, and they won't think it's weird. But if you were to leave, say, Beijing, Shanghai, or Guangzhou, and go to smaller places, it would still freak them out a bit. Wow, not only a foreigner, but a foreigner speaking Chinese. So those big metropolises, you know, you can get any sort of food you would want. It's like being in Sydney or Melbourne or something like that. And they're quite sophisticated places. But the further you leave the big cities, the more strange it would be to someone to encounter a foreigner.
And so you have to kind of get around that whoa, I'm freaking you out, but I want you to talk to me.
Well, it's funny. Sometimes I remember I once went up to this, a lady just selling fruit, like sort of little old lady, had a stall. And this was actually just on the outskirts of Beijing, but it's a real knockabout part of town and where local villagers who live on the outskirts of Beijing come and buy their fruit and things like that. And I just wanted to do a little interview with her. And so I came up and I start asking her questions. And she looks at me and she's just speaking at 100 miles an hour, telling me, you know, I can't speak English, blah, 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 blah. Or I can't speak your language. And she's just firing. And I'm just trying to get her to calm down and say, listen, I am speaking your language. Okay, if you just lit, that wouldn't have, you know, occurred to her that a foreigner could possibly speak Mandarin. Yeah, so it is quite funny in that way.
Stephen McDonnell, still right in the middle of things in Beijing. Jane Hutchin finished at the beginning of 2001, wrote a book about her experiences, and then took up big postings in the Middle East and London. So how does she look back on her time in China?
Well, level of satisfaction, it was the best, so I'd have to say 10. Degree of difficulty, that was also very, very difficult, so probably a 9.5 to 10 in terms of how hard it was. But it was such a great time. It was pre a lot of the amazing technological advances that we have now. I mean, we used to have to drive, for example, 45 minutes through traffic, an hour through traffic, just to get our tapes to be able to satellite them back to Australia. Now they're done in the bureau with a push of a button. So it was a very different time. But I appreciate that, because in a way I got to see China before the whole gloss of the Olympics arrived. I think I got to see a real nation that was in the throes of an incredible reform.
And that was the last part of our two-part documentary, taking a look at what it was like working as a foreign correspondent in China many years ago, and comparing it, of course, with today. And as we heard in part one, and of course the part that we just heard, there are some aspects, of course, that haven't changed. You're listening to Media Network Plus from PCJ Radio International. Before we continue with this week's propagation forecast, I want to tell you about something coming up on February the 16th. On February the 16th, between 16 and 18 hours UTC, we're going to be testing both our 1 kilowatt transmitters targeting China. And that's going to be between 16 and 18 hours UTC. You can find out more information at our website, www.pcjmedia.com. That's www.pcjmedia.com. Anyway, now time for a look at propagation and what we can expect over the next 7 days. Here's our propagation guru, Dan Hensley.
Here's propagation for the week from February 9th, 2013 to February 15th, 2013. The 10.7-centimeter flux starts out at 125 on February 9th, dropping down to 115 on February 10th and 11th. From February 12th to February 14th, a 10.7-centimeter flux of 120, ending our week with a 10.7-centimeter flux of 115 on February 15th. The A index will be 10 on February 9th, dropping down to 8 on February 10th. The rest of the week with a stable A index of 5 from February 11th to February 15th. The KP index starts out at 3 on February 9th and 10th, followed by a stable KP index of 2 from February 11th to February 15th. Unfortunately, propagation could be ruined or only spotty this week due to several events that took place on the sun this past week that continue to affect radio wave behavior. The magnetic canopy of decaying sunspot AR1667 erupted on February 6th at 0021 UT, producing a C9 class solar flare and hurling a coronal mass ejection into space. According to first look images from NASA's Stereo B spacecraft, the CME appears to be heading in the general direction of Earth. If so, the likely time of arrival would be February 8th through the 9th. A massive coronal hole is currently spearing a space wind out of the sun's high northern latitude that could cause a glancing blow to Earth's atmosphere sometime soon. Last Saturday, February 2nd, the solar activity forecast called for quiet. In fact, says amateur radio astronomer Thomas Ashcraft, it was really loud. There were several strong solar radio emissions, including one super strong Type 3 burst at 1954 UT. Ashcraft captured it at 28 megahertz and 21.1 megahertz as it totally drowned out a shortwave voice transmission. The source of the burst was sunspot AR1667, which unleashed a C2.9 class solar flare just before the roar emerged from the loudspeaker of Ashcraft's radio telescope. Type 3 radio solar bursts are produced by electrons accelerated to high energies, 1 to 100 keV, by solar flares. As the electrons stream outward from the sun, they excite plasma oscillations and radio waves in the sun's atmosphere. When these radio waves head in the direction of Earth, they make themselves heard in the loudspeakers of shortwave radios around the day side of the planet. Back to you, Keith.
All right, thank you very much, Dan Hensley. Anyway, before we go, I want to remind you again, if you want to be a receiver reviewer for Media Network Plus, it's easy to do. Just send us your name, how long you've been an SWL or DXer, what are some of your favorite stations you listen to, what kind of radio you actually have now, and include your address, your phone number, and the best time to call. And please put that in UTC, and then we'll put all the names in the hat, choose to, and send you a receiver. We don't even know what you're going to get, and we're not going to tell you. It's going to be a bit of a surprise. We already have two people. Yes. Well, maybe there are two Peters. We don't know. Chris and Pedro, I should say, who have received them, and we're going to be speaking to them very soon to find out what they think of the receivers that we send them and give us their honest opinion about them. I'm getting everything mixed up today. I think it's because we actually have a holiday coming up in many parts of Asia, beginning on the 9th of February, which is, just now, actually, which is, of course, the Chinese New Year, Year of the Snake and everything. So I think we're getting into a little bit of party mode. Anyway, that's it. That's all we have time for. Once again, if you wish to contact us, our email address is mnp@pcjmedia.com. That's mnp@pcjmedia.com. Now, I know that there are some listeners right now in North America who are facing a bit of a snowstorm. That's actually one problem that we don't have here, except I just found out there actually is, I couldn't believe it, a skiing area of Taiwan. We'll tell you about that another day. But I thought we'd end with something recorded in 1943 for V-Disc, which was a label set up by the U.S. government for its troops overseas. And it's a nice little number by Frank Sinatra called Sunflower. So on behalf of Paulette McQuarrie and Dan Hensley, this is Keith Powell wishing you all 73s to you all and 88s to the ladies.
Gentlemen of the armed forces, this is the hoodlum from Hoboken. I'd like to sing a tune for you. My name's Sinatra, and I hope yous like it, hey.
She's a sunflower, she's my one flower, she is the flower of my heart. I was born in Kansas, I was bred in Kansas, and when I get married, I'll be wed in Kansas. There's a true blue gal who promised she would wait. She's a sunflower from the sunflower state. She's a sunflower, she's my sunflower, and I know we'll never part. She's a sunflower, she's my one flower, she's the flower of my heart. Troubles end in Kansas, folks unbend in Kansas. Everyone you meet will be your friend in Kansas, and they'll all be there to help me celebrate with my sunflower from the sunflower state. She's a sunflower, she's my sunflower.